Okay, welcome everybody to today's board meeting. We now have a quorum, and so we're going to go ahead and get started. We welcome those in attendance, and we're grateful to all the board members for being here as well today, and we appreciate all those joining us online. We thank you for all for your attendance and participation. In order to support a respectful meeting, items that disrupt the meeting, intimidate other participants, or cause safety concerns are not allowed. For example, jeering, cheering, clapping, and waving signs that may intimidate other speakers and cause a disruption. Generally, props and equipment are not allowed. If you have a prop or a piece of equipment integral to a presentation, please clear its use with a staff member before entering the room. Diana there is in the back, and so you can, Diana's waving her hand. If you have questions about proper placement of recording equipment or recording in general, please coordinate this with staff before the beginning of the meeting, or go ahead and do it right now to help ensure that it does not disrupt the meeting or make the attendees feel uncomfortable. And staff may request changes to placement of recording equipment or other equipment to help facilitate the meeting. If you have written remarks, a document, or other items you may want the board to review, please do not approach the dais. Instead, please give them to staff and they will distribute them for you, which has just been done. And so we appreciate Joan for your partnership and in passing that to Larry. And failure to follow these decorum rules may result in removal from the meeting. We're going to go ahead now, and as we've indicated on the agenda, we're going to consider moving into a closed session for about 20 or 30 minutes, at which point we anticipate coming back for the public portion of our meeting. As many of you know, the Utah Inland Port Authority has been engaged with the School and Institutional Trust Lands Administration for the purchase and remediation of land that was the former Salt Lake City landfill. We're still working through that process, and we're optimistic about the direction that's going. And so we're going to go ahead and to facilitate that process, have a closed conversation as board members before we come back here to the public session. And so I will now entertain a motion to move to a closed session to be held now, 2:05 p.m. at the Utah State Capitol at 350 State Street, room 445, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84103. And via electronic meeting for the purpose of a strategy session to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property as allowed and described in sections 52.4, 204, and 205 of the Utah Code under the Open and Public Meetings Act. Do I have a motion to move into closed session? Ryan Starks moves, and can I get a second? Second. Senator Stevenson seconds. Larry, will you do a roll call vote, please? Yes. Okay. Yep, that passes. So the board and necessary staff are going to step across the hallway to a private room, and then we'll go ahead and come back here. And again, we anticipate this closed session discussion lasting between 20 and 30 minutes, at which point we will continue with the balance of the agenda. Thank you.
The duration of the closed session was 34 minutes. That period of silence has been edited from this recording.
Let's see. Okay, now we're good. Okay, thank you everybody for your patience. Well, we are in closed session, and we appreciate staff and board members for participating in that conversation. We've now completed, and so we'll go and resume the public portion of our meeting. Our agenda today includes an executive director report, a budget update, the annual review of several existing board policies, and approval of the new wetlands policy, and awarding of funding under the Westside Community Enrichment Initiative. We will have an opportunity for public comment towards the end of the meeting, and we will go ahead and – are we going to go ahead and wait to vote until the end of the meeting, or are we going to vote as we go? Okay. And then we'll go ahead, and as we've done for the past several meetings, we'll go ahead and wait to vote on some of these policies and initiatives until after that public comment period. And so jumping right in, first off, let's go ahead and review, and if the board is so inclined, approve the minutes from our October 4th and October 24th board meetings. We have a motion.
Mr. Chair, so move to approve October 4th and October 24th.
Okay, Abby, thank you for that motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Senator Stevenson, for the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. And we'll now go ahead with our executive director report, Ben. And so we appreciate all of your time and energy to get this thing teed up for us. So over to you.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair. And thank you for those who are with us today. We appreciate you staying with us through the closed door meeting. There is a lot going on at the Utah Inland Port Authority. There's no question about that. And a lot of it is an opportunity to really help the state. Mr. Chair, I'll just say this is we're starting out, and I'm going to try and share my screen here. There we go. It's really interesting as we look at the challenges that the Utah Inland Port Authority is taking on. We look at the Northwest Quadrant. We see a lot of distribution center warehouse development going on. A lot of things that are related to, quite frankly, lower paying jobs and things that are truck served, providing a lot of air pollution into the Northwest Quadrant. We're talking about, from the Utah Inland Port Authority standpoint, pushing back and trying to create new direction, economic and environmental direction within the Northwest Quadrant. We're also talking about areas in the state that historically have been underserved from a rural perspective. We saw that this morning in the Salt Lake Tribune, a good story on what the board and the port are doing down in Beaver County. These are counties that have not had a lot of economic growth for generations. We saw an entire community that was devastated by one company leaving in Smithfield. We see similar dynamics in other parts where we've been working on these project areas. It's important to take a step back and recognize that as the Port Authority is moving forward, we're taking on some of the most difficult economic and environmental projects in the state of Utah, particularly as we consider potentially remediating a landfill site and trying to put it back into the economy in a positive way. This is really, really important work. And I think for those who feel like their viewpoint is not being represented or that we're not doing enough to help with this or that, I just want to note that, you know, we're still starting this process. This will be a generational process that we're trying to undertake here. So we're not going to see development slow in the Northwest Quadrant overnight. We're not going to see, you know, our goal of pulling trucks off the road, putting more on rail, taking pollution out of the air. Those things don't happen overnight, but we realize that if we're part of the solution now, then we can help to protect those areas in the future. And we're excited to be part of the solution. We feel like the Port Authority is doing some really good and important things. To that point, I'm going to go through my slides. I'm going to skip that, but the chair has asked, and I'm going to keep this actually shortened today, that at our meetings, I give just a quick update on what's happening and what our plans are for the future. I want to note that we've pushed the adoption of the Tooele County project areas, both the Grantsville and the Tooele County, to December 5th. It's our anticipation that we will be in Tooele County on that date for our board to consider adoption of those project areas. I also want to note that we have put the Weber County project on hold. And so that project as of right now is not moving forward. So we don't have any dates for when it will be considered. And so we'll continue to work on that one. But that project area as of right now is not moving forward. So we just want to keep the board aware of that and some of the dynamics. I will say we're looking at some really awesome recruitment opportunities in some of the other project areas, working on long-term generational type economic projects in several of the project areas throughout the state. So we should have some really cool things to be talking about in the foreseeable future. I also want to note, Mona will be talking about this a little bit later on, but the wetlands policy that will be before the board, we're excited about that. We feel like that, again, in terms of the Northwest Quadrant project area and being good stewards of the land that is around us, will contribute millions back to help protect wetlands and protect the Great Salt Lake. So we're excited to help be good stewards of those incredible natural resources. One thing I do want to mention, I got a little bit of chiding from somebody, and I won't mention their name, but their chiding was, if you're going to do anything to impact the Northwest Quadrant, you really should do it here in Salt Lake City. So we are doing some things that impact the Northwest Quadrant today, and so we are doing it in Salt Lake City, and we'll be taking public comment from those, obviously, that will be impacted by the community. One of those things is the West Side Enrichment Initiative that we've been working on in coordination with Salt Lake City. And so we are going to award, at the board's discretion, several of those grants today. I'm going to show, for those who didn't just see it because I just showed it, but I'm going to show it again, those grants that – it was pretty quick, yeah. I'll show it more slowly this time around. So we have taken a step back. We're working with Salt Lake City, and we would like to see, and as I believe Salt Lake City would as well, an amendment to the interlocal agreement that we have with them. We'll keep working through that dynamic. but we don't want to award all funding until we can have good coordination and alignment and make sure that we're on the same page with Salt Lake City. That being said, our board, and we have notified Salt Lake City as well, our board has decided to fund and make the following funding recommendation, or I am recommending, I will say that, we'll let the board decide when they actually vote on it, but I am recommending to the board that the following grants be made and awarded today as part of our board meeting. They are $100,000 to Neighborhood House, $50,000 to the Suazo Business Center, $50,000 to Tree Utah, $100,000 to NeighborWorks, and $10,000 to the Salt Lake City Police Foundation. So the board will have an opportunity to act on those, but we feel like at least getting some of these grants out now is a really good effort to make sure that we're working with those on the west side of Salt Lake City and are invested in making sure that that part of the city is successful. So we look forward. Yes. Yes. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The request was that I just give a little bit of background, and I assume because I've worked through this that everyone knows, and I know that's not the case. So let me take a step back. What this is, the Neighborhood House, Suazo Business Center, all of these grants are coming from our interlocal agreement with Salt Lake City. So when Salt Lake City filed suit against the port, we wanted to work with them in a collaborative way, particularly over the last 12 months with the new board in place, and make sure that the funding that was coming back that was attributable to the Salt Lake City portion of funding was accounted for in a way that was different than the rest of the money. So it was categorized in three different areas: community impact, environmental impact, and economic development projects. Those three areas, 40% for environmental, 40% for environmental within the jurisdictional area, 40% for community impact, and 20% for the economic development projects. This does not represent the total of the $1.3 million that was set aside for the community impact. And as such, obviously, there's more money that will be awarded as part of the community impact down the road. But, and thank you, Madam Vice Chair, as part of the agreement with Salt Lake City, we agreed that we would do studies, and we want to make sure that we've got enough money to complete those studies in a robust way and that we're doing things in coordination and that we have a chance to be transparent and working with the local community stakeholders as we put that money to best use. And so we feel comfortable, staff, from a staff perspective, that we can award this amount of money now and hold other dollars for future community purposes. And I think Representative Schultz.
Representative Schultz, do you want to jump in with a question or a comment?
Hey, I do. I got a question. Ben, you said something I just want to get some clarification on. That I think something about the interlocal agreement and it being done in coordination with Salt Lake, which I think is good. I want to make sure that we're coordinating with Salt Lake. But I just want to make sure it's clear, as per the legislation, the board has full control on what the money gets spent on. And that means we can consult with Salt Lake City, but I just want to make sure that we're not giving up, well, we can't legally give up the right for the board to make full, to have full decision making on that process.
Representative. We were losing you for just the tail end of that comment, but I think the comment was the board, and it's not according to the interlocal agreement, it is according to statute, has the ability to make all final says on that money. And that is an important point to emphasize. So yes, that is the statute. It's not the interlocal agreement, but the statute, and obviously the interlocal agreement cannot violate statute. So.
Okay. That's, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, and Victoria has got a comment as well.
I would love to thank the board during this first round of granting for taking the community enrichment part of the title seriously. These are agencies that no matter where I show up in my community, they are there. They are doing affordable home ownership. They are doing workforce development. They are doing child care.
they are doing all the things that are necessary for my neighbors who are working hard to establish their own American dream, or who are the blue collar workers who have historically been left behind, actually have a chance at it. And I'm really thankful that you saw deep into what my neighbors need and were able to support those efforts. Sometimes it's easy for us to be trampled in larger narratives, especially because they need that childcare because they're working multiple jobs, or they need workforce development so they can have just one job instead of several to pay bills. So thank you all for seeing them and seeing their need. And as the first round, this first little disbursement of money, taking care of my neighbors first and foremost.
Great, Victoria. Thank you for that. Ben, back to you.
Well, we will just, I'll just conclude my portion of the presentation by saying, look, I know there are those who would love to see the port either not exist or to be slowed in our efforts. Let me just say, I think we are working, and I hope we can do it collaboratively, whether people want to believe it when I say that or not. But I hope we can do it in a way that is collaborative. We understand we may not always agree when it comes to what the best policy and what the best development opportunity is, but we appreciate the opportunity to work together. And we're gonna always take every viewpoint, whether it agrees with ours or not. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we've got good economic opportunity for future generations. And I'm going to say we want to make sure, and I think we're expressing that through our wetlands policy, again, whether you believe me or not, that the Great Salt Lake and the wetlands are going to be preserved for future generations as well. We have no intention of hurting or harming any of the wetlands that surround the Great Salt Lake. On the contrary, we want to put our money where our mouth is and start to put money in to protect those wetlands. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll end my executive director's report and turn it back to the board for.
Ben, thank you for all the work and the leadership on that, and very, very grateful to Victoria, our partners in Salt Lake City, and others have been an integral part of these conversations, this progress. Okay, moving on to our budget update. Ben Byes, we'll go ahead and turn the time over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to give a quick budget update, let the board know where we're at so far this fiscal year. We started July 1st, so this first quarter of 2024 fiscal year. So this first category here is operating expenses. You can see the categories there, doing pretty well on these. You can see currently over budget on our legal fees. And as Ben explained in the closed meeting, kind of double dipping right now in the legal fees as we're working on this purchase of real estate, as well as our normal day-to-day legal fees. And that's why that's a little bit higher. So we do expect that to trail off towards the end of this fiscal year. Other than that, under budget on our categories, I do want to point out a couple of things under this next section, inland port development activities. This $3.2 million that we have budgeted right here, that is that Salt Lake City differential allocation that Ben talked about, the 40-40-20 split as outlined in statute in the interlocal agreement. We are planning on spending that whole $3.2 million for the benefit of Salt Lake in those areas this year. So as he talked about, those grants that are being proposed are just the beginning of how we plan to spend that money there. The $1.2 million publicly owned infrastructure improvements was the Stalder payment authorized by the board when we redid that contract at the very end of last fiscal year in late June. Overall, you can see our total expenditures projected just over $28 million, $29 million budget. Coming in almost $2 million under right now. So certainly keep the board apprised throughout the year as our budget is spent. Also in the board's packet for your information and full transparency, we've listed every transaction from the inland port this year, as well as a summary of all the payments by each vendor that we've paid. So that's my quick budget update. Happy to answer any questions from the board.
Great. Thank you for that, Ben. I think it's important to highlight all the time and energy that's gone into increasing accountability and transparency as it relates to our finances. As a new board, we appointed a treasurer. We set up a finance and audit committee. And Ben, could you take 30 seconds and explain the finance and audit committee and that, what that process looks like? I think it's helpful as we look at this budget for all of us to be familiar with that, or for the public as well, to know the additional expertise that has been a good partner to you to help make sure that we have our fiscal house in order.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The Finance and Audit Committee is something that, Ben started right when he got here, kind of on the heels and the conclusion of the legislative audit that was done. We got some of the best finance people in the state. It was Van Christensen, who was the internal auditor at Department of Workforce Services. He is now the division director for the Division of Finance with the state. Unfortunately, with that new duty, he had to leave us. We replaced him with David Davis, who is the internal audit director with the Utah State Board of Education. Someone I've known for a long time, really, really good auditor and someone that really, in our first meeting really jumped right into the information that's presented. They're doing the same thing. They're reviewing all of our transactions. They're reviewing our proposed budgets, and making sure that that's in line with best practices. And people that have been around for a long time. The second person is Dennis Carver, internal audit director at Department of Natural Resources. Again, he's been around a very long time, both in internal audit as well as finance director roles with the state. And then Ryan Starks from our board is the board representative on that committee. So we like to make sure we have the board's input on all of our major decisions. Certainly, we're actually the audit of our financial statements just started end of last week. So hopefully by the December board meeting, we can have the results of that for the board. But they will look at that report from the auditors that the state auditor's office is doing that audit this year. Any other audits that we get, they'll review those recommendations. We went over some RFPs and RFIs that we have coming up for major procurement. We ran those by that Finance and Audit Committee our last meeting. So really anything that has to do with major financial expenditures, audits that we're receiving, we run that by the board for their input.
Great. Thank you for that overview and for all your work on this. Any questions or comments from the board before we move on? Ryan, thanks for serving on the Finance and Audit Committee. We appreciate it. Okay, moving on. We'll now have presentations on four board policies from Chief Compliance Officer Amy Brown Coffin. So Amy, you can go ahead and we'll get these mics turned on for you so we can run through your presentation. Yeah. Let's see. Why don't you try again?
All right. Perfect.
Yep, we got it.
Thank you. All right. So I'll be presenting these three policies that we're just bringing back to the board. It's been about a year since they have been put into place and made some minor updates to them. And then I'll turn the time over to my colleague Mona to talk about the policy that we're going to be seeking board approval for. With board policy review, again, this really contains the framework of how we're bringing these policies to the public to seek board approval. We've done just some very minor changes on it, moving this to my ownership. Prior, it was the board secretary's auspices, and then just making sure that we have a little bit of enhanced roles and responsibilities, whether it's the policy owner that comes to these meetings to present to the board the changes, or if it's a new policy, or defers to me. That's often the case as policy owners just ask me to do this collectively. The next one, which is whistleblower. Again, we've just done some minor changes to it, just to right-size the role titles on that. Again, we're following a lot of the standard as it relates to the state auditor's office for using their hotline, and of course, for staff members to know that they can reach out to their leader, to me, to the board when there are concerns. So again, nothing major at all with that one. And then the last one with the internal control program, just a couple finesses on this one. Again, as we've changed and made sure some of the role titles are reflective of that, some minor grammatical fixes. And then there was a range on a lot of the risks, controls, and control tests that we would do for what was considered medium to make sure that we reflected not just greater than, but greater than or equal to. So things that fall within that mid-range as we analyze these risks regularly, that is right-sized to that. So again, minor changes, and we look forward to seeking board approval in our December board meeting. With that, I will pause for any questions.
Great. Thank you, Amy, for that overview. Any questions or comments from the board? Okay. Thank you, Amy, very much.
Thank you.
Can everybody hear me? Great. Okay. I'd like to take a moment to thank you all for this opportunity. I am so excited to speak to our final draft of the wetlands policy, which is being presented today for your approval. This policy not only provides UIPA employees and our partners an understanding of the responsibilities and obligations pertaining to impacted wetlands, but it also presents a wetland mitigation framework for UIPA project areas that goes above and beyond regulatory requirements. Approval of this policy would be a huge step towards demonstrating UIPA's commitment to sustainable economic growth, as well as stewardship of Utah's precious natural resources. I want to thank everyone that took time to review this policy and provide constructive feedback. I want to extend a special thanks to Jack Ray and Representative Casey Snyder. Your comments and suggestions have helped shape this policy into the comprehensive framework for wetland mitigation in UIPA project areas that it is today. I'd like to present a high-level summary of what this policy includes. This policy summarizes wetland regulations, including regulatory requirements enacted by the 1985 Food Security Act, as well as Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. This policy also summarizes wetland mitigation sequence, which includes wetland mitigation methods vetted by the Army Corps of Engineers through Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. Alongside these federal wetland regulations, this policy summarizes various Utah state initiatives, programs, and procedures for wetland assessment, monitoring, management, and enhancement. The framework this policy presents for wetland mitigation in UIPA project areas includes the following. For the purpose of this policy, we've provided a traditional definition of wetlands, which generally includes swamps, marshes, bogs, playas, and other similar areas. Landowners within UIPA project areas with wetlands present on their property may be eligible for incentives if their projects avoid adversely impacting wetlands, enhance or restore wetlands, establish new wetlands, or permanently preserve wetlands on or near their property at the benefit of the surrounding environment. For the Northwest Quadrant area, tax differential funds outlined in the interlocal agreement between Salt Lake City and UIPA may be used for wetland mitigation projects within or at a location with a nexus to the Northwest Quadrant. As determined in collaboration with Salt Lake City, and upon approval of the board. We'd like to see this require a percentage of tax differential to be designated for wetland mitigation. However, this would need to be done in conjunction with Salt Lake City. For UIPA project areas outside of the Northwest Quadrant containing wetlands within either the Great Salt Lake or Utah Lake watersheds, at least 1% of the tax differential for the associated project area shall go, and I want to emphasize the word shall go towards wetland mitigation projects within or at a location with a nexus to that project area upon approval of the board. For all other UIPA project areas outside of the Northwest Quadrant containing wetlands, at least 1% of the tax differential for the associated project area may, and I will emphasize the word may, go towards wetland mitigation within or at a location with a nexus to that project area upon approval of the board. And again, with final say from the board, tax differential funds designated towards wetland mitigation may be used for water purchases, land easements for natural buffer zones, wetland characterization, as well as wetland mitigation methods identified by the EPA and the Army Corps. And lastly, this framework recommends that wetland mitigation projects should be prioritized if the project mitigates wetlands that are part of a larger wetland complex, if the project mitigates wetlands with a designated beneficial use category for wetlands, if the project partners with the Great Salt Lake Watershed Enhancement Trust, if the project is located near a wildlife and waterfowl management area or a national refuge, or if the project creates natural buffer zones between wetland complexes and development areas. Actions that leave only isolated small wetlands surrounded by development are disfavored. Lastly, per this policy, UIPA will coordinate wetland mitigation expenditures with the Utah Department of Natural Resources, as well as the Great Salt Lake Commissioner. Thank you again for this opportunity and for your time, constructive feedback, and consideration of this policy. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Mona, thank you very much for that presentation and all the time and energy that has gone into preparing this policy. It's thorough. It's 19 pages. I know you've gotten input from a lot of concerned members of the community that are willing to roll up their sleeves and shape policy. Even though that may not get headlines and it may not be as exciting as standing somewhere with a bunch of cameras on them, it's those people that are truly concerned and leaning in to help shape policy. They've been phenomenal partners to us to make sure that we've got a strong policy moving forward. And I apologize, I did not introduce you before you began. For anybody in the room or online, that was Mona Smith. She's our phenomenal director for environmental engineering and has been leading this process with public input for many to many different people over a very extended period of time to come up with this policy. So thank you, Mona, for that. And Ben, I understand that you've got a couple thoughts that you'd like to add, and then we'll open up for any questions or comment from members of the board.
Yeah, let me just say, first and foremost, thank you to Mona. I feel like Mona has carried a lot of water on this policy, not just for 2 months, but for even longer than that since I've been associated with the port. She's been doing an amazing job. She's thorough. She knows the policy. She knows how to intertwine and where to add federal, state, where to coordinate. She did an amazing job putting this together. I think this wetlands policy is really, really good. I'm proud of the work that our team has done. This wetlands policy ensures that not only will we not have a negative impact on the wetlands in the Great Salt Lake, it gives us a chance to help protect. We can do things like buffers, easements. We can actually help with secondary water share purchases, get money back to help get water back into the Great Salt Lake. We're coordinating with the Department of Natural Resources. We've had a chance to work with Casey Snyder, Representative Snyder, and his feelings on this. All of that is a long way of saying that we really reached out. I made personal phone calls trying to get feedback from certain stakeholder groups, and we didn't get any feedback. And I feel bad that I think this policy maybe even could have been a little bit stronger had we gotten everybody's participation in that. I know there are some who are not happy with whatever we're doing and however this turned out, but I'll just say the last 45 days, you've missed a significant opportunity to contribute to a wetlands policy that we're taking very, very seriously. And so we want to keep listening. We want to keep getting better. But if you withhold your comments from us and then decide to do public comments in other ways, it doesn't help our processes. And so I would just say in the future, we want to be good partners. We want to be good stewards. And if you're withholding your voice from providing feedback to help make us better and stronger, then we're not going to be as good as we could. So we hope in the future, as we look at these different policies, that we have an opportunity to work with everybody and that no one will withhold their voices from us, but they'll contribute back and we can have an opportunity to make this policy as good as we can. That being said, I love where we're going with this. I think it gives us money to actually contribute back to the Great Salt Lake and the wetlands surrounding the lake. And I think we're absolutely going the right direction.
Ben, thank you for sharing your perspective. Okay, comments, questions from the board? Victoria, and you are seat number 9, I believe.
I am.
Got it.
So point of clarification on this policy, it exclusively is designating the 1% that could potentially be returned as a carrot to help with preserving wetlands, correct? Do we require anyone who gets economic assistance from us or you know, investments from us to demonstrate that they have a strategy that is protective of the wetlands?
Yes, what we spell out is a strategy of coordination with Department of Natural Resources. They've got a number of different services, a number of different committees, also working with the Great Salt Lake Commissioner to make sure that we're in line. We want to make sure that this money gets to where it's most needed, and specifically within the area of these project areas. And so we've got a good process laid out. Ultimately, this will be under the direction of the board still. And so any money appropriated will have to come back through this public transparent process.
I love this as a first step. I'd love to see us be even more assertive in our capacity so that anyone who's participating in our areas, I know we've had this conversation about other project areas where we would like to be the standard bearer, but I'd like it so that if you're participating with us in any capacity, you must have a demonstrated, documented strategy for how you're going to protect wetlands, you know, the minimization, the avoidance, whatever it is that, you know, you're choosing so that we can. I don't think we should preserve the standard now. I think we should be actively raising it. This investment is one of those strategies, and I think we have others available to us that I'd like to see us explore without, God forbid, getting to a stick instead of a carrot.
Sure.
If I may comment or add to what Ben shared. So the regulatory process that is required by the Army Corps, if there are adverse impacts to wetlands, then the permittee has to go through the permitting process with the Army Corps. And during that process, they are required, you know, to go through the steps of avoiding any possible, or if possible, any impacts to the wetlands. And if not, then they have to do compensatory mitigation for those wetlands. What this policy proposes is that for our project areas that contain wetlands within the Great Salt Lake and the Utah Lake watersheds, we are requiring that a percentage of the tax differential go towards wetland mitigation above and beyond what is required by federal regulation. So there is a bit of a stick there. And this policy also offers that landowners with wetlands present on their properties may be eligible for incentives, which also provides a bit of a carrot. So I hope that helps.
Great. Mona, thank you for that. Representative Schultz, I believe you've got a question or a comment.
No, I just got a quick comment. You guys, Mona, fantastic job. Honestly, and Ben, whoever else helped from your team put this together. I know I've had a few people reach out to me along the way, including Jack Ray, and just a huge shout out to Jack Ray. There's only a handful of people that have probably had more impact on the Great Salt Lake over the last several years, maybe decade, than Jack has. So anyways, I just appreciate all that you guys have done and everything you put together. You did a fantastic job.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Ryan, let's see, you are seat number 10.
Okay, can you hear me? So there's a mentality, it's a banana mentality. Have you heard that? It's build absolutely nothing anywhere near anything. And I know that a lot of people would love to see that, but we're the fastest growing state in the country. We're going to double our population within the next couple of decades. And as we look to the future, I just want to give a big shout out to the port and to Mona for being proactive, because the development and the growth is coming, whether we like it or not. And we can be proactive, and we could put together a policy like this that protects the wetlands, that ensures the quality of life that we all love. Or we can wait for development to come without any controls. And so just this proactive approach, I think, is really impressive. And just wanted to give you a big kudos.
Ryan, thank you. That is a great acronym. I'm going to start using that one. Okay, any other questions or comments from the board? Okay, seeing none. Mona, again, thank you so much. And Mona, what I think is so impressive about the work you're doing is as an entity, we have limitations on what we can do, right? The growth is coming, but we don't do zoning. We don't do land use. It's private property. And so these private property owners can go and they can develop with current entitlements in ways that would be adverse to our wetlands. And so Mona, what you've done is to think very innovatively, say, okay, within the scope of who we are and what we have the power and authority to do, how can we bend the arc of development in a way that protects wetlands, in a way that is constructive for the community? And like you say, there are some carrots and there are some sticks in there. This is a start and it'll be an ongoing effort, but this is a good start. And so really grateful to you, Mona, and for your leadership on channeling input from so many different stakeholders in the community. So we appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Now moving on, we will now go into the general public comment portion of the meeting. Now that we're beginning, we will no longer accept any additional public comment cards. Upon recognition, the speaker shall approach the microphone to give their comment. All comments shall be directed to the chair. That's me. No person addressing the authority shall be allowed to comment more than once during this comment period. Once your name is announced, you will have 2 minutes each. In order to support a respectful meeting, items that disrupt the meeting, intimidate other participants, or cause safety concerns are not allowed and will not be tolerated. We will conclude the public comment portion of the meeting. We plan on 3:30. Depending on everybody's time, we could try to extend that for another 5 minutes. I know we're running a little bit behind. I know that we have another engagement. We will get through as many of these comments as we possibly can. And as always, if we don't get to your comment today, even if we do, or if you're not planning to comment, please look at the agenda where you can submit written comments. Again, those are very, very effective. They're helpful. We had a written comment from somebody here on the front row who is a good partner of ours and helped refine and improve the meeting today. And so please do take the time to write. Those comments are reviewed, responded to, and they do shape things in a very meaningful way. And we appreciate all those that have participated in that. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. And first up, we have, Alita Thurber. Will you please approach the dais? And you can sit in the middle chair. We'll go ahead and turn that mic on for you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Alita Thurber. I'm a direct descendant of Albert King Thurber, who crossed through the valley in the days of 49, became a Mormon pioneer, and he settled a bunch of little towns down through southern Utah. And I'm sharing with you that story because it's pertinent. You know, this past weekend, I've been down in southern Utah looking at some property and bouncing around in a truck with a rancher going up and down the valleys along the Fremont, because I'm moving, you know, from my home on the west side. And as I was driving along with this rancher, we were discussing, you know, good stewardship of the land and water rights and farming and stuff like that. And, you know, the reality of the situation, we're talking about doubling the population of Salt Lake. We live in a bowl. That's a temperature inversion. We have such horrific pollution right now. Can you possibly, any of you, imagine double the population in Salt Lake City in 20 years without addressing the air, much less the port? You know, it's completely unrealistic. And it's so disappointing. I mean, every one of you knows the reality of the air that we're breathing out there is not healthy. We are not going to have electric cars suddenly save us from that. All of you have to look at the reality of what's
going on. Okay, Alita, thank you very much for being here and for your comment. Okay. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you have anything else you'd like to add, please submit that in writing. Okay, next up, Joan Gregory, please. Come on up, Joan.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity to talk with you in person.
Hey, Joan, can you pull the mic a little bit closer to your mouth?
Closer? Okay, I can do louder.
We want it loud and clear, Joan, everything you have to say.
I can always do louder.
Thank you.
Did everyone get a copy of the report from the coalition? Can you hold it up? I want to see that every member of the board got a copy. It's really important for you all to read that. I as you know, I know the process that we go through on all of this, and I also know that there are opportunities to change this policy. And I hope that you will make time to read it, read the document that was submitted by the coalition, and to consider all of those points that are in there. And I don't really want to take up any more time other than encourage you to read the report and consider everything that's in there as you go forward in this process. Thank you.
Great, Joan. Thank you for that. And we'll make sure that Mona, if she has not yet received a copy as well. And we'll also make sure that Representative Schultz receives one. Thank you, Ben, for getting that done. Okay, Lauren Griffith.
Hello and good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you all. It's good to see you in person. I'm here to express some concerns about the locations of some of the project areas that are currently proposed are located on or adjacent to wetlands. And I know that the state legislature has drawn a line 7 miles from the meander line of the lake that some of these project areas fall within. And I would ask you to consider to relocate these areas away from this fragile ecosystem. Wetlands play a very important and underappreciated role in helping to clean our air and our water. And as right now, as many of you know, there are pretty terrific consequences to our health because of particulate matter pollution, nitrogen dioxide, other nitrous oxide. In fact, women along the Wasatch Front have up to a 16% higher chance of miscarriage. A study done by Johns Hopkins University evaluated over 1,500 cases of people who had died by suicide in our valley and found that there was a 40% increase in odds of someone dying by suicide associated with increases in nitrogen dioxide levels that we suffered during our inversions. And that's where it's important to look at the reality of the situation and understand that we do live in an area that experiences these thermal inversions. And this phenomena has been studied in other areas of the world that also experience thermal inversions. We just have to be conscientious about how much pollution is here in the first place. And by developing over these wetlands and removing these microorganisms, you're removing the ability of them to help clean our air on top of contributing additional construction, asphalt, and pollution that is going to worsen the problem. So it's sort of a double hit to our air quality by developing on these wetlands. And we do need to be prepared for the future. We need to be smart about how we progress with our economic development. People are coming, I understand that, but we really have to be conscientious of the reality of the topography, which we can't change, but we can change, you know, where we pave over these precious lands and the impacts we have on our air quality. Thank you.
Lauren, thank you. And thank you for nailing the timing perfectly. And I'll note that Lauren is the first author listed on the report. And so we appreciate the time and energy that went into that. And we're grateful that Mona has that as we continue to look at wetlands moving forward. Okay, Sarah Buck.
Good afternoon. So I've been on this process with you guys for almost 6 years, and it kind of feels like 6 years of magical thinking. I watched, I don't know, $60 million of taxpayer money come to this organization and have seen very little for that money. And every time I listen to the verbiage that comes out, I'm more baffled by what you are, what your intended purpose was. I do think you were magically created, and maybe that feeds into that, because you aren't voted in and there's no accountability for money. And so it does become magical. And I appreciated hearing these grants that are going out, but
I find myself wondering, how does that factor in? Like, shouldn't that all be coming through our legislature? Shouldn't we be supporting these communities through the programs that we have and the process that we have? Why did we create an authority, a board, magically and again, I really don't know what your purpose is. It changes regularly, and I'm sure it's frustrating for you as well, but as a taxpayer, it really is stunning that I live in a state where there's so little accountability for so many tax dollars going to what appears to be the benefit of developers. And I thought there was this idea that public funds didn't go to businesses in that format. So
thank you, Sarah, for your comment and your participation. Bernadette Taylor.
Good afternoon. I appreciate this time as a concerned citizen. I feel like the inland port proposed for this Gilbert Bay area is in direct opposition to the goal of saving our lake. I think this inland port would have a negative impact on our wetlands. It would affect the insects and the bird habitat. It would worsen our air quality, our light, and our noise pollution. And we don't need any more pollution in this valley, as I think you all know. I do not think that this inland port is even needed or necessary. And I think it should be asked of the citizens of Utah whether it's necessary or desired. So why not have a vote? Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comment. Brian Minch.
Earlier in this meeting, Mr. Hart made a thinly veiled criticism of what appeared to be the port's opponents for not providing input on developing a port wetlands policy. While at the same time, over the last couple of years, the port has made every effort possible to suppress public input. I really couldn't believe that that's what I was hearing. I hope maybe that's an indication that maybe things are going to change. Insecticides and herbicides are used today around the Great Salt Lake against mosquitoes and invasive plants by multiple government and private entities against mosquitoes and other cumulative insect problems. The impact on humans, wildlife, and beneficial insects is significant. More and more industrial development in the Great Salt Lake wetlands will dramatically increase human presence in these natural areas and inevitably increase the pressure for more and more chemical spraying, reducing and contaminating the food supply of the 12 million birds that inhabit the lake's ecosystem, and exposing more and more Utah children to higher and higher doses of hazardous chemicals that increase the risk of cancer, reproductive toxicity, impaired brain development, and neurologic diseases in adults. In short, add this to the issue of the long reasons why the Port Authority must abandon their plans that will destroy the wetlands along the Great Salt Lake and the Wasatch Front. We cannot save the lake if we destroy its wetlands. How can we possibly save or mitigate the wetlands while paving them over with asphalt? Industrializing our wetlands is no way to prepare for future growth. Thank you.
David Bennett.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the board. I appreciate Mona Smith's policy that she outlined today, and I look forward to reading it and taking a look at it. But excuse my skepticism when I take a look. I'm a retired criminal justice and corrections consultant, having done that for 50 years here and around the country. And the decision to build the Utah State Prison made by this legislature, where it was made, is beyond absurd. And we're seeing the results of that, the issues that Dr. Mencia spoke about. It is the wrong type of building to build in that type of location. And so we get now to the Utah Inland Port and the wetlands policy, which, again, I look forward to taking a look at. But why does virtually every project area be located in or around wetlands? I understand that the state is projected to grow by double by the year 2050. I understand the need for the development to support that. But my question to you is, what about the environmental issues? I appreciate Mr. Hart's commitment, verbal commitment to it, but the inland port, everything that we're seeing has environmental concerns written on the face of it. Virtually every project area is in or around a wetland, many of which are adjoining the Great Salt Lake, which we know is in crisis, which we know that if we don't take proactive steps to save, there's no way the state will grow by double the population, because we will be having toxic minerals spread throughout the valley by the winds from the dried up great over the Great Salt Lake. We need to take dramatic steps immediately to manage the environment. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you for your comment. Ari, you're up next. Or it could be Evie. Apologies about that. Why don't you go ahead and say your name so we make sure we get it correctly in the record, please.
Hi, I'm Evie.
Evie's feeling a little shy. She was very excited to make a public comment.
Well, we're excited to hear Evie's public comment.
Would you like to say something? Okay, the sign that she had made was Save Our Great Salt Lake, and so she had wanted to share her comment. Thank you.
Great. That is a great comment, Evie. Thank you very much. My daughter Ava is about your age, and Ava, I'm sure, would be happy to hold up that same sign. So thank you for being with us today. Let's go ahead to our last comment, Dita Seed.
Down.
Yep, it does.
All right. I'm Dita Seed. So I was not going to comment, but then something Mr. Hart said provoked me to step up here. So I spoke with Mr. Hart last week about the wetlands policy and actually made some suggestions. So you're hearing that we're feeling very unable to contribute to this process by how you've structured comments and so forth. So maybe that's something that you could take a look at. I just want to point out that Salt Lake City, the Salt Lake City port location right now is a mess. So there's warehouse construction everywhere, and it is immediately adjacent to the wetlands that are in the so-called natural area. And there's no stormwater pollution prevention plan. I mean, there are lots of things that should have been put into place that are not in place. And that creates great concern about what would happen with these other project areas. And remember, all of what you're doing is using tax dollars to incentivize and fast track growth. And I submit that that is the wrong thing for you to be doing at this time in these critical wetland areas when Great Salt Lake is in so much jeopardy. And that everyone should take a big step back from saying, yes, build your industrial development here on these wetlands or next to these wetlands, and we're going to subsidize it with Utah taxpayer dollars. That's just the wrong approach for us right now, and begs the question, does the state really care about saving Great Salt Lake? The Tooele location is deeply troubling because they're dependent on well water. There really has not been a good analysis of what the water future for that area looks like. Glad to hear that Weber is off the table. I hope it's permanently off the table. You can tell us that. That actually would be a good thing, and we would be celebrating that if that's true.
Okay. Thank you, Dita, for your comment. Okay, that concludes the comment period of our meeting. And again, we appreciate everybody's comments, young and old. And Evie, congratulations on your first public meeting. We're all proud of you for being here and being a part of the public process. We now need to finalize a few different agenda, move into the action period of our meeting. We'll go ahead and finalize the funding awards for the Westside Community Enrichment Initiative that Ben discussed. Do we have any board discussion on these that we didn't have earlier before we go ahead and move forward? Okay, seeing none, then I would entertain a motion. And to make sure we don't mess this up, it looks like staff has this word for word up on the slide.
Would you like to read it? That's the best to do. I can read it. Mr. Chair, I propose the following motion. The UIPA board authorizes funds to be appropriated as presented for grants from the community impact portion of the Westside Community Enrichment Grants between the Inland Port Authority and Salt Lake City.
Thank you, Abby, for the motion. Do I have a second? Second. Okay, Ryan seconds. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. Okay, moving forward, we'll now consider a motion to approve the wetlands policy presented earlier. And can I go ahead and get a motion to vote on BP 17 wetlands policy?
So
moved. Okay, Ryan moves. Can I get a second? Senator Stevenson seconds. And we'll go ahead and do a roll call vote. Larry, can you do that for us, please?
Ryan Stark.
Yes.
Jerry. Yes.
Yes.
That's right. Representative Schultz, if you.
Yes, my vote is yes. Sorry, I couldn't hear my name.
Nope, that's okay. Thank you for that, Mike. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Larry, for that. Okay. Again, we thank everybody from the public, for the staff, board members for being here today. This will conclude our business, and immediately following this meeting, we'll adjust the seating and participating members of the panel a little to convene the Crossroads Public Infrastructure District meeting. But before we do that, can I get a motion to adjourn today's board meeting?
Motion to adjourn.
All right, Senator Stevenson moves. Can I get a second?
Yes.
Abby seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everybody.